Where do we go from here? That's one of the big questions that brings you to this podcast. You come here to learn from experts about the latest news on the biggest stories that are impacting our lives and our families during this fateful year. In a year like 2020, you might feel especially grateful for every opportunity to be together, whether that's phone calls or video chats with people you love, or programs like 1A that give us space to connect over ideas and information. You can show your gratitude with a donation to your local NPR station. Just go to donate.npr.org/1A. So if you can afford to make a donation to support this program, it's very easy. Again, you can simply visit donate.npr.org/1A to make a gift to your local station. That's donate.npr.org/1A. And thanks. This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. The holidays are here, and well, you've probably seen the ads.
This holiday season, give your loved ones an unforgettable gift. The MyHeritage DNA test is a simple way to reveal your ethnic roots and find new relatives.
With 23andMe, it's like giving 150 personalized gifts in one colorful box.
The real gift isn't what's inside the box. It's what's inside the person who opens it. Give Ancestry DNA. The only DNA test that can trace your origins to over 150 ethnic regions.
At-home genetic tests are a popular gift over the holidays, with purchases surging after Thanksgiving. A recent survey by MIT found that 100 million Americans will have taken a home DNA test by the end of next year. This has given private companies the world's largest collection of human DNA. So what are they doing with it? Can you get the benefits of a health and ancestry test while also protecting your privacy? And let's say the results are not what you were expecting. What then? Joining me now for this conversation is Brandon Obunu. He's a professor of evolutionary biology at Yale University. His research focuses on epidemiology, population genetics, and evolution. Brandon, welcome to 1A.
Thank you very much for having me.
Also with us, Jackie Haggerty, the Vice President and Deputy General Counsel and Privacy Officer for 23andMe. Jackie, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And Aaron Broadwin, a health and tech reporter for Stat News, which focuses on health and medicine. Aaron, thanks for being here today.
Hi there.
So, Professor Obunu, what is DNA and what can it tell us about ourselves?
Oh, starting off nice and easy. Well, DNA is what I describe as the kind of information storage molecule for all of life as we know it on Earth. And really, it contains the information for building and operating many aspects of a living thing. It's the information that we inherit from biological parents, and it's the information that we pass on to biological offspring. And within it are kind of a lot of important things to know about, again, how an organism is built and runs and operates and lives and functions.
Aaron, give us a quick overview. How do these tests work?
Sure. So essentially what you're doing with any of these tests is you're often spitting into a tube. Having had a family member do it and telling me about the process, it's actually a lot more work than it looks like. You have to spit quite a bit into a tube. But then what the companies do is they're not analyzing all of your DNA, your entire genetic blueprint per se. What they're doing instead is, in general, most of the services are looking at SNPs, or single nucleotide polymorphisms, nice little short phrasing there, that basically make up most of the traits that we know and are familiar with, such as hair color, eye color, certain kinds of genes that contribute to breast cancer risk, all sorts of things. So if you think about all of your genetic material as kind of, you know, the book of who you are, SNPs can be thought of as kind of some of the most important phrases, words, possibly even chapters in that book.
How many companies are offering home DNA tests at this point? I mean, how large has this market gotten?
It's a pretty large market, although sales have slowed down just over the past few years, mostly as a result of some of the controversies surrounding the well, privacy controversies, but also the Golden State Killer case, which is pretty infamously tied to some of these genetic testing services. But there are definitely more than a handful out there. Some of the most prominent ones include 23andMe, Ancestry, and MyHeritage.
Well, I want to play some messages we got in our voicemail inbox.
Frank calling from Rhode Island.
This is Alex calling from Arvada, Colorado.
Hi, I'm Rachel from Lawrence. I took a DNA test about 3 years ago, and I did it because my father passed away when I was young, and I wanted to know more about his side of the family. But when I got the results back, something was strange.
It came forward that I was actually adopted, and I found that out at 27 years old.
I wasn't African-American and Puerto Rican. My mom, my whole life, shared with me that my dad was a Puerto Rican man.
And so after asking some relatives about it, I found out that I was adopted. As you could imagine, it was quite a shock. Overall, I'm glad that I know. I've gotten to know some of my birth family.
And I actually found my biological family shortly after.
That meant that my sisters and I shared the same father. So that's helped our bond to get closer. So that's my story with 23andMe.
Aaron, what do we know about whether or not these companies are giving people a heads up and saying, hey, you might get some unexpected results?
Sure. Yeah, I think this is really, really important. I'm glad you played these messages. They're kind of surprising to hear. Sometimes, you know, they can lead to good outcomes, such as in the case of some of these voice messages where people were able to connect with family members, find out things that they didn't know, and they were in a, you know, mental place and a you know, perhaps also socioeconomic place or whatever place that they're in, a good place to kind of receive that information. But a couple years ago, there were some really good reporting. I believe Sarah Zhang over at The Atlantic did some really, really good reporting about what can happen that is negative related to some of this information being found out. I mean, it can sometimes break up entire families. You can imagine finding out some of this information, not being prepared, and perhaps being extremely angry, extremely upset, or, you know, just feeling lied to your whole life. And, you know, these aren't always, I just want to emphasize that these aren't always positive. And many of the companies do not prepare people for this information, or at least they didn't when a lot of these tests first were starting to come out. And that's particularly true for some of the databases that are not represented on this call. So there's just so many out there that don't have many of these disclaimers that are really, really important to just psychologic and also general health. And that is a big problem because, as we heard in some of these messages, they can change lives pretty drastically.
What kinds of information are companies collecting and what do they
do
with it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so everything from your ancestry to your risk of cancer, certain kinds of cancer that is, to information about allergies, your predisposition even to Alzheimer's are often included in a genetic test report. So all those things are good to know about, but there are limitations to the things that you can learn. And there's also the important caveat to keep in mind that so long as this data, and we'll get into this later, I'm sure, but so long as this data stays in the databases in which you've submitted it, it could be all well and good. It's when it gets out of those databases that it could be a problem. I mean, you can imagine a potential employer wanting to see all of its employees' risks of Alzheimer's and then, you know, not wanting to hire the ones that are at higher risk if they want to keep them working at the company for a very long time, that sort of thing. Now, I don't know of any cases like that happening yet, but researchers have told me that it is a concern for the future.
Professor Obunu, what sort of research potential do you see with these massive databases?
I think they offer kind of large databases of relatively and increasingly diverse individuals from diverse backgrounds. And so they can kind of aid in our quest to understand the genetic underpinnings of certain diseases and complex traits, you know, like, you know, like height and you know, the color of your eyes. So structural traits or disease traits. So I think it can aid in our fundamental understanding of how kind of genetics contributes to those. I think it is right. I think the conflict, I think the trouble, I think the gap is in whether or not it's going to be truly useful for predicting any individual's odds of kind of acquiring a certain disease at a certain point. I think that was a bit more dubious.
We're talking to Aaron Broadwin, a health and tech reporter for Stat News, Brandon Obunu, a professor of evolutionary biology at Yale University, and Jackie Hargitay, a vice president and deputy general counsel and privacy officer for 23andMe. Jason tweets, I got DNA tests for myself and my parents. It's been helpful in my genealogical research, but I am concerned that companies can sell that data for nefarious purposes. And DJ Eddie tweeted, a friend's sister discovered her father was a longtime family friend who happened to be her mother's supervisor. Still to come, how law enforcement uses DNA databases held by private companies. That's just ahead.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Gimlet and Resistance. When people all around the world were protesting this summer, you'd hear it over and over. This time is different. But how? In Gimlet's new podcast, Resistance, host Saeed Tijan Thomas Jr. brings us stories from the front lines of the movement for Black lives, told by the generation fighting for change. It's a show about how we can make sure this time really is different. Resistance is out now. Follow and listen for free on Spotify.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or maybe perfect strangers? You can get all the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
Abigail Disney says if she ran the family company, she'd deal with the current economic crisis very differently.
A CEO should be like a ship's captain. You know, if other people are drowning, you're the last one off the ship.
Ideas about the history and future of finding financial stability. That's on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
I'm Jen White. This is 1A. We're talking about the type of data you're handing over when you take a home DNA test. I'm speaking with Brandon Obunu, a professor of evolutionary biology at Yale University, Jackie Hargitay, vice president, deputy general counsel, and privacy officer for 23andMe, and Aaron Broadwin, a health and tech reporter for Stat News. Sam emailed, a few years ago, I decided to have a DNA test, and I discovered that I was adopted. I hired the ancestry professionals to trace my biological parents. While my father was dead, he had children, and Ancestry asked if I wanted them to be able to contact me. A few minutes after I hung up with Ancestry, I received a call from a woman whose first words were, I've always wanted to have a sister. She and I talk weekly and have flown cross-country to visit with each other. I know DNA testing may have a downside, but it can also have a wonderful and blessed upside. So a lot of you have had some positive experiences with these tests, but we've also heard some skepticism. This is Diane from Virginia.
I did have DNA testing because a cousin is doing genealogies, but since then I have thought better of it, and I wish I hadn't done it because there could be dire unintended consequences. I invite anybody who is interested in giving their DNA away to read Michael Connelly's book, Fair Warning. It will, you'll have to think about that before you actually give your DNA.
Just a quick note that Fair Warning is a fictional crime novel about the dangers of companies trafficking in DNA data with no government oversight or regulations. Jackie, how does your company, 23andMe, protect the data it collects?
So first of all, it's important to note that our database is private, and we've built it that way from the beginning. There's no third-party access, including law enforcement. They can't access our data, and we won't provide that information to law enforcement unless we're required to do so by law. And that would require a valid legal request, such as a court order, subpoena, or search warrant. To date, we have never provided any individual user data to law enforcement, and we continue to be committed to scrutinizing any requests that we receive.
Aaron, when we look across companies, how clear are these options to opt in or opt out?
Yeah, I think that's a great question and one that has changed over time. The ways that companies, position these opt-ins or opt-outs, is different now than it was a couple years ago, and it probably will be different in the future than it is now, right now when we're having this conversation. I think it's great to hear that 23andMe has not, worked with law enforcement and will not, unless given a court order or mandate to do so. And I also think some of the ways that 23andMe is set up are really wonderful in that they do clearly lay out some portions of where you might not want to opt in to something or may, where you might want to opt in. But they do, it's important to keep in mind, rely on consumers, people like you and me, carefully reading and thinking through all of these things, which, as we know, I think any of us who uses an app on our phones, we see the TOS or the terms of service, and we often kind of scroll and check, and that's that. So when you, if you do choose to use one of these tests, I'd like to just emphasize to people that, you know, when it comes to something that involves submitting a biological sample, you might want to look a little more carefully at those terms of service. And at the outset, you asked, you positioned the question in a good way, which I think is, you asked across the board, what does this look like, not just, you know, in terms of 23andMe. And I think that's really important because there are so many other services out there that are even less clear than 23andMe is. I mean, I think most people are now familiar with the infamous case of the Golden State Killer. And in that case, a couple other DNA databases were used, including one that is very well known about, which is DEDmatch. But then there are a couple others that came out in recent years, and I think we'll get into this in the future. But some private databases like 23andMe, which we just heard is private, and I think that's important. But some private databases were actually used, and at the time, all the companies denied that they had collaborated with law enforcement. But it turns out that two companies, including one of the ones I talked about at the start, MyHeritage, as well as another company called Family Tree DNA, were actually directly involved. So Family Tree DNA, you know, denied multiple times and to multiple reporters that they were. But what happened is they actually used genetic material from the rape kit at the Golden State Killer, at one of the sites of the Golden State Killer, one of his crimes. And then they uploaded it, created a DNA profile, and then they let law enforcement set up a fake account and search for matching customers. As for MyHeritage, they actually didn't even have to be directly involved. So when they said at the time back in 2018 to reporters like me that they weren't knowingly involved, that was true. However, a civilian geneticist, which, I mean, could be kind of anyone, who was working with investigators, what they did is they just uploaded the DNA to MyHeritage. So to me, that means, you know, be wary of genetics companies, especially ones that let you upload DNA samples. I'm pretty sure 23andMe does not. But the way you frame the question at the outset, I think, is important, which is that it's important to keep in mind across the board, these kinds of rules and regulations are not uniform by any means.
Well, and Jackie, just for clarity, do you allow the upload of DNA material?
We do not.
Okay. We got this tweet from John who says DNA data these companies hold is also not protected under HIPAA or any other privacy laws. Jackie, what are the laws or rules governing what you do with DNA data?
Yeah, so our data is not subject to HIPAA, but it is subject to standard FTC regulatory regimes, and also subject to new privacy laws that are coming out across the country, including the California Consumer Privacy Act.
Well, we have to say goodbye for now to Jackie Haggerty. She's the Vice President, Deputy General Counsel, and Privacy Officer for 23andMe. Jackie, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So, Professor Obunu, let's say my father and my sister both take DNA tests. How much information could be figured out about me, even if I never took a test?
Oh, I mean, you know, quite a bit. I mean, I think we wouldn't be able to kind of, you know, construct anything. There's a lot of ways that the information that you just gave me in terms of your relatives could be reconstructed into an individual. But, you know, we'd know a good bit about kind of a lot of the traits that could be present in your genome. Of course, you know, we wouldn't be able to impute anything, you know, specific about you, but there's a good chunk of who you are that is in that information.
Well, I want to play a clip of comedian Patton Oswalt. This is him talking to Conan O'Brien about his experience taking a DNA ancestry test.
I had a huge spike in Mongolia.
You did? Did you really?
A big chunk of my DNA comes from Mongolia, so I'm sort of going, how many years was my dad in Vietnam? But they have an 800 number. You can call them, and so I call them up and go, hey, I got my map, and it's really interesting. I got all the pasty white countries, and what's with Mongolia? What's going on my map? And the person on the phone didn't even pause and just said, yeah, that's Genghis Khan. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, Genghis Khan had sex with everything.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Basically, most people are descended from Genghis Khan.
Wow, yeah.
There are trees that are descended from Genghis Khan. He just...
That's comedian Patton Oswalt. And I want to bring another voice into the conversation, Joyce Tung, Vice President of Research at 23andMe. Joyce, thanks for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about the ancestry side of these tests. How is that determined through DNA?
So, I mean, genetic ancestry is really about using your DNA to connect you to ancestors from distinct genetically similar populations that existed before, like, transcontinental travel and migration were really common. And so what we do is we look at DNA from these different populations and look for patterns and markers that are distinct for that group. And then we compare that to your DNA and look for similar patterns and markers. And from that, we infer, you know, which sort of populations your DNA may have come from.
Professor Obunu, how does human migration complicate ancestry tracking?
Well, human migration kind of reassorts genomes and it kind of creates admixed populations, number one. So I think, right, the notion of being able to kind of track a linear kind of history of who I am genetically is kind of contingent upon there being, you know, relatively isolated geographical populations. And I think what migration and kind of an admixture can do is it can kind of throw off those relationships. But more than that, I think even before we get there, the notion that I have a percentage of my genome that is relegated to a part of the world, right, Northern Europe or West Africa, a pocket of West Africa, is again kind of based on the assumption that that population has kind of lived in that region and continues to. And I think migration throws off those relationships.
Well, we got this email from David who asks, what is the consistency and reliability of DNA test results between various companies? Aaron?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. I'm so glad to be joined on this call by Joyce and by Brandon, because they're clearly the experts in this arena. I kind of want to take it back a little bit to privacy here, just in the sense that, I mean, we're talking about what can you find out by uploading or by having a family member do one of these tests. And I was looking at a recent study, and I've reported about this in the past, that kind of tried to figure out, we often talk about, okay, so your data when you upload it, or your DNA when you upload it to one of these databases, sure, it's private in that moment. But will it stay that way? And a lot of research is getting increasingly close to doing something called re-identification, where information that's been quote-unquote de-identified or had its, you know, been scraped of personal identifiers, like your name, is now, you know, in a sense, anonymous. But what happens when lots of similar and related people start taking these tests is it actually gets increasingly likely that even someone who did not participate in one of these databases can be re-identified. So there was a recent study where essentially the researchers tracked down people whose DNA was similar enough to indicate that another person was a third cousin or closer. And you know, you start using narrowing factors like age, geographical location. You can start zooming in on a person of interest, and boom, I mean, when they did this, over 60% of Americans with European ancestry, which, by the way, is the population that's the most highly represented in these databases, and that's something important that we can get into, too, the diversity issue. But a whopping 60% of Americans, white Americans with European ancestry, can have their identities revealed this way, which is, I'd say, you know, somewhat troubling.
We're talking about home DNA tests like Ancestry or 23andMe. My guests are Aaron Broadwin, a health and tech reporter for Stat News, Joyce Tung, Vice President of Research at 23andMe, and Brandon Obunu, a professor of evolutionary biology at Yale University. Chris wrote on Facebook, "My sister and I were both given up for adoption. We found each other in 2018. For us, it's been a positive and life-enhancing experience." And Steve emailed, "Last year, I purchased an Ancestry kit to see how Irish my curls were. Very Irish, it turns out, but to my surprise, results came back. I was 0.7% Nigerian. 5 to 6 generations back, my grandparent was 100% Nigerian. I've been left with more questions than answers." We'll get to more of your questions and comments after the break. I'm Jen White. This is 1A.
This message comes from AT&T, committed to keeping students and teachers connected. AT&T has connected over 200 million students with tools and technology for distance learning. More at att.com/remote learning.
Hi, it's Jen. Just a quick reminder that you can make a donation to support this program, and it's very easy. Simply visit donate.npr.org/1A to make a gift to your local station. That's donate.npr.org/1A. And thank you so much for your support. Let's get back to our discussion about home DNA tests like Ancestry or 23andMe. My guests are Joyce Tong, Vice President of Research at 23andMe. Also with us, Brandon Obunu, a professor of evolutionary biology at Yale University, and Aaron Broadwin, a health and tech reporter for Stat News. We got this email from Cher who says, will your guests please explain how full siblings have different ethnic compositions? For example, mother is 100% Polish, father 100% Italian. Genealogy test shows one sibling is 30% Eastern European, 70% Southern European. Another sibling is 45% Eastern European, 55% Southern European. Joyce?
I mean, without actually seeing those results, you know, and I don't know where they came from. I think it's kind of difficult to speculate about, you know, what might have caused those results. You know, it's possible that, you know, that, I mean, again, I just don't know based on, you know, where those results come from. I can say that for us, you know, we do an enormous amount of validation and checking of our algorithms to, you know, look at all these different use cases and ensure that we're getting results that are sensible for our customers, because it's obviously critical for them to have a positive experience with the product.
Professor, is this a place where some of the reliability of these tests come into question?
No, I mean, I think I echo the sentiment. I think without knowing much, I mean, I think biological offspring, you know, all of their DNA, you know, is in their biological parents. So I think that there shouldn't be, if the test was done right, and I think if maybe there wasn't a contamination issue or there's some other issue, technically speaking, a result where an offspring kind of has different DNA than their biological parents shouldn't be the case, you know, typically. Now, I think, again, maybe there's a contamination issue. Maybe there's technical issues. I know the technology behind sequencing and kind of purifying DNA and these is very quite good. So I think that's something that the industries have gotten quite good at through the years. And so that tends to not be the bottleneck.
Professor Obunu, you were talking earlier about the lack of representation in these DNA databases and the limitations that creates around research potential. Talk about that a bit more.
Well, it's complicated. I mean, I think the dearth of kind of Black participants in kind of genetic ancestry is kind of similar to kind of the mistrust you see between, you know, African Americans in particular and the medical establishment, and kind of our distrust of people having our information for all of the reasons we talked about with regards to privacy. So I think that's a very historical thing, and it's kind of rooted in some, you know, perfectly reasonable, I think, suspicions. I think where it gets complicated for me is I'm not an evangelist that says that Black people need to just kind of simply go all have their genome sequenced, right? I think because it's more complicated than that. I think the geneticists on our side, we need to be a little bit more careful about the way that what we're selling in terms of what genetic information means. So I think we're just as complicit in the problem. I think if we were more honest and responsible with regards to how we interpreted genetic information, then maybe communities who are not participating would be more likely to. So I think it is about recruiting more of a more diverse genetic pool, but it's also about us as geneticists being more responsible with regards to how we're selling our results.
Bob emailed, my mother's side of the family is Swedish. I am told that decades ago, pre-DNA testing, my mother's aunt had done some genealogical research. She stopped when she found evidence of being related to Rasputin. Let's listen to this news clip from WBRC in Alabama.
Allison was curious about her ancestors, like so many others, and took one of those at-home DNA kits.
I'll just go check it out. See what happens.
Her 23andMe test results came back, and she knew she needed to take them to a doctor.
I actually found out that I had this blood clotting disorder that can actually cause clotting and strokes.
The test results meant that during the pandemic, she needed to be extra cautious. COVID-19 can cause damage to a person's organs.
Joyce, a lot of tests now bundle ancestry with health information. What sorts of things do you think a DNA test can tell you about your health risks, and how accurate is that information?
You know, there's a lot of different things that your DNA can tell you in terms of, you know, your predisposition for different conditions and diseases. So blood clotting is one example. You know, for us, you know, we know that it's incredibly important for, you know, for our tests to be accurate, for the information that we provide to be accurate. We work with the FDA, you know, to ensure that our information meets their standards as appropriate. And I think we always try to provide the appropriate context in terms of, you know, what information, you know, what can you learn from this information, and also what can you not learn from this information. You know, as we know, genetics is only just part of the picture. There's an enormous number of things besides genetics that influence your risk for different conditions. And the field is incomplete, right? We don't know all even the genetic factors that are involved for any given disease.
Well, Carol emailed, I'm a university professor who teaches genetics, and I'm concerned about the BRCA1, BRCA2 test, as most people do not understand what a positive or negative test means. I'm concerned about a person getting a positive test in the mail without the help of doctor or genetics counselor to help interpret the data. Professor Obunu, how much of an issue is that people receive these tests and then are left to question what it really means for them?
Huge, huge issue. I think it's the defining issue right now. And I think that's the one that's the gap that kind of needs to be ameliorated immediately. You take the BRCA1 and BRCA2 issue, for example. I mean, I think people just have a difficult time understanding what risk and probability really means and animating that and kind of in terms of how does that actually change how I feel about my everyday life. Really what these things mean is you have a predisposition. That means that trait or that mutation or that SNP or that kind of risk profile, right, apply to a population that really may or may not have anything to do with you personally and certainly may have lived in a way much different than you're living. So if I have an elevated risk, you know, in one of these tests for type 2 diabetes, right, that may not take into account the fact that I'm living a vegan lifestyle and eating much better than my ancestors ate. And these are the kind of things that we really do not account for when we're trying to kind of assess risk. Of course, when I see them on the test, it's just a number, and I kind of walk around now feeling like that is a part of me, like it's some kind of inevitability, and that can change a lot of the ways that I live, sometimes for better, but oftentimes for worse. So it's pretty troubling.
And briefly, Joyce, how is 23andMe thinking about how to provide additional context around the results of these tests?
So, you know, as part of our work with the FDA, you know, we did a lot of comprehension testing around our reports and, you know, showed that, you know, more than 90% of individuals across a wide variety of educational backgrounds did understand these sort of key concepts around, you know, the results and what they mean and what they don't mean. That being said, I think, you know, these are concepts that, you know, not everybody is accustomed to thinking about. And, I think one of the things that we've worked on for years and will continue to work on is really just boiling things down to make them as clear and interpretable as possible for our customers.
Well, we got this email from one of you who says, what about how insurance companies could potentially deny you and your offspring or relatives coverage due to potential for illness based on the results from these tests? Aaron, what are we finding there?
Yeah, that's a really good question and an important point. And it goes back to what I had, was talking about earlier with regard to a potential employer kind of discriminating against you. I think insurance companies discriminating against you is a more likely near-term scenario. I mean, the 23andMe Health Report looks at some of the genes related to diseases that include breast cancer, celiac disease, Alzheimer's, as I mentioned earlier, Parkinson's. And it tells you if you carry a genetic variant that you could pass on to your offspring, which would increase their risk of a genetic disease like cystic fibrosis, for example, or sickle cell anemia even. The problem is that a 23andMe report that comes back negative for those variants does not mean that you're at a low risk of disease, because the tests don't look at all your DNA. As I mentioned earlier, they kind of, if you're all your DNA is a book, they look at these SNPs, which are words or phrases or even paragraphs. So because of that, they're only looking at the genes that have been highly studied and are known to relate to disease risk. So again, as I said earlier, if you walk away from this report thinking, I'm in the clear, I don't have any of these variants, that doesn't actually mean necessarily that you are in the clear. And that's particularly relevant for the BRCA1 and 2 genes with regard to breast cancer.
That's Erin Brodwin. She's a health and tech reporter for Stat News. Also with us today, Joyce Tung, Vice President of Research at 23andMe, and Brandon Obunu, a professor of evolutionary biology at Yale University. Thanks to you all for this conversation. Today's producer was James Morrison. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk more soon. This is 1A.